It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is currently 59 degrees, a few clouds out there. Out at the airport, they are showing southerly winds at 18 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day until about 10 p.m. tonight. Southeast winds to 15 or so, turning to the northwest after midnight tonight. Look for that rain to turn into showers tonight, then scattered showers tomorrow with mostly cloudy skies tomorrow and high near 62. And on Sunday, partly sunny, high near 68. Mostly sunny on Monday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Bayside Fire Department has a brand new chief. That and AI in schools.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. 103, 108, 110, those are the temperatures the heat index is hitting in major East Coast cities such as Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and New York City. The National Weather Service has excessive heat warnings and advisories covering more than 170 million people are in effect across the eastern half of the U.S. as well as smaller portions of the Southwest and California. Climate expert Jeremy Hoffman of Groundwork USA sheds light on the communities that stand to be most severely affected.
Communities of color tend to have higher rates of heat-related illnesses, and we have observed directly that these neighborhoods tend to be warmer by several degrees on average during these heat waves.
Hoffman says the disproportionate impact includes the extreme elderly, residents who rely on public transportation and have to be outside, as well as those who work outdoors. Scientists have been warning that human-driven climate change is fueling the intensity and frequency of extreme weather events. Leaders of an apparent coup in Niger say they have replaced the country's president. However, the U.S. says there is still diplomacy going on to restore constitutional order in Niger, a key U.S. partner. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has the latest.
While a general claims to be the new head of state in Niger, the U.S., the United Nations, and a regional African group are all backing the ousted president, Mohamed Bazoum. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. is watching closely.
We believe that there is still space for diplomacy here, and that that diplomacy is actively being pursued, not just by the United States, but by our allies and partners and our African partners as well.
The U.S. has about 1,000 troops in Niger, an important base for counterterrorism efforts in the region. Kirby says there are no plans yet to change the U.S. footprint. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Former President Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will appear for the first time at the same campaign event in Iowa tonight. Trump remains a front-runner for the 2024 Republican nomination, and his rivals see an Iowa win as key to defeating him. Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters has more.
Trump has shied away from events with the rest of the crowded field. He's also criticized Iowa's Republican Governor Kim Reynolds for remaining neutral in the run-up to Iowa's caucuses. Ron DeSantis has been trying to reset his stalled campaign for 2 weeks, including a two-day bus tour here.
That's Clay Masters reporting. 13 Republican presidential candidates are set to take the stage in the Republican Party of Iowa's Lincoln Dinner in Des Moines. At last check on Wall Street, before the close, the Dow was up 176 points, roughly 0.5% at 35,459. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's Bayside Fire Department has a new chief. Scott Ellis joins the crew after more than three decades as a firefighter on the East Coast. And as KMXT's Brian Vanois reports, he says he's here to stay.
Scott Ellis spent most of his life in Connecticut and was getting ready to retire when he found out he and his wife were about to have their seventh child. It inspired him to take another look at his career and think about where he would like to raise the newest members of his family. He originally planned to move to Kodiak when the job opened 2 years ago, but the timing didn't work out then. Fast forward a few years later.
I was given an amazingly gifted second opportunity to go through the process and wind up here in Kodiak.
He says he was excited to come to the community about a week ago. After accepting the job this time, he drove through Canada with his family's dogs. Ellis started as a cadet when he was still in high school and became a full-fledged firefighter after graduating. Before moving to Kodiak, Ellis served as second-in-command at a fire department in Connecticut. Ellis says while he didn't have any roots in Alaska, his wife was born on the Coast Guard base here in Kodiak. The family talked about moving back, and he says they plan to be in Kodiak a long time.
The good citizens of Kodiak will have us, and more particularly me. Our goal is that my daughter graduates from Kodiak High. So we're talking 12 years out at least.
He says his goal in Kodiak is to be as transparent as possible and ensure engagement with the community.
Doors are open. Stop in. You know, your kids want to see the fire trucks, come in, we'll take time, show them the fire trucks, answer any questions you may have. If you ever thought about, you know, volunteering and being a paid-per-call firefighter here in Kodiak, I'd love to talk to you about that.
Ellis says some of his plans include better connecting with Kodiak residents and talking to kids at schools, as well as keeping up to date with the department's social media. When not at work, he and his family can be found hiking around or walking the various beaches around the island. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois.
As the Alaska school year begins next month, there will be a lot more conversations in classrooms about artificially intelligent tools, especially at the college level, where students are expected to learn about the latest technology and how they might use it in life. As KUAC's Robin reports, the University of Alaska system is counseling instructors on how to adapt to the surge in AI tools.
University of Alaska Fairbanks has an instructional design office to help faculty keep up with developments in teaching.
Our philosophy here is to adopt a best practice, something that's going to lend itself toward really good teaching and good learning.
Dan Lasota is an instructional designer, and he's been writing teaching tips about artificially intelligent tools for UAF's Center for Teaching and Learning. He says after the natural language processing tool, ChatGPT, was launched, professors and instructors started to see its use in student assignments.
It was new to both teachers and students, and so we started seeing some complaints bubbled up, and then people were looking for us for answers like, what do we do about this? How do we respond?
Lasota says for a student to ask a chatbot to write an assignment for them is plagiarism, and the university already has a student code of conduct that requires honesty.
We don't need to do anything differently as far as academic integrity regulations go, because the language is broad but precise enough where it says all forms of academic dishonesty are prohibited, and there's consequences.
But ChatGPT is just one natural language processing AI tool. There's also Google Bard, Microsoft's Bing Chat. There's even talk of a possible Apple GPT. And there are tools that do arithmetic, higher math, and some draw pictures from instructions given to them. New tools are being developed every day, even in the research departments on the UAF campus.
The question then becomes, is any use of AI cheating or academic dishonesty? Well, it really depends.
Lasota says some of these tools can be used to help tutor students, and some can enhance what the teacher wants the student to know. To help instructors sort out which tools can help and which are just cheating, the Center for Teaching and Learning is offering a two-day workshop next month.
One of my goals for the workshop is to give people actual experience with an AI, typing things in. What kind of responses do you get? What kind of delay is there? How well does it know your subject area?
And so we did a demonstration.
Some of the things it does insanely well. So, for instance, I'm trying to write something very random here. Can you write me a 10-line verse in iambic pentameter that describes the process of making chocolate chip cookies?
Lasota had his result in about 5 seconds.
In flour and butter's creamy dance unite, with sugars sweet and crisp, embrace at play, a dash of salt and balance.
Okay, the poem goes on, and it's actually quite clever. The whole thing is on the fm.kuac.org website. But the chatbot was sloppy with the rhyme in the last two lines. So Lasota asked it to fix it. And the first thing he read off the screen was an apology for the mistake.
You're correct, and I apologize for the oversight. In the traditional Shakespearean sonnet, the last two lines form a rhymed couplet. Here's the corrected version. From heat's caress emerge with golden hue, our hearts, they leap at each sweet cookie's view.
This is just one example, and Lasota wants instructors to be much more familiar with AI tools students might use or that they might use this coming school year. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The Internet and mass marketing campaigns declared this past weekend an event, Barbenheimer. It was the hottest box office selling weekend since before the pandemic for the motion picture industry, and not the result of one hit, but an unlikely movie duo, a reimagining of the iconic blonde doll Barbie and a broody Christopher Nolan film about the creation of the atomic bomb. Hot pink became trendy again, and people debated which movie to see first and made sure to have tickets pre-purchased. The day before the premiere, Bethel's Cervic Theater announced they would be showing Barbie on the opening weekend. Oppenheimer will be coming when freight cargo arrives. KYUK's Sunny Bean was at the first show.
In Bethel, movie tickets are only sold at the door. 10 minutes before the first viewing of Barbie, 13 customers stood in line. For many viewers, part of the Barbie-going experience was choosing an outfit and joining the movie-going mania. In Bethel, nobody wore the characteristic hot pink. Customers waited quietly for tickets and popcorn. Still, the theater knew the town was keen.
On Facebook, this movie got a lot of responses. So we saw a lot of likes, people tagging other people, and saying, hey, we should go at this time or this day.
That's Natalie Mikesaw, the director of secondary education for the school district. Today, she's manning the cash register and concessions because the movie theater is at the school. And as a school official, she stepped in while the theater manager is on bereavement leave.
We're pretty limited, especially during the school year when the building is actually a school.
It's the town's only theater. And during the year, it's been acting as an elementary school after the local immersion school burned down. The theater has two screens, which show two movies over the weekends. Mikesaw explained that getting movies upon release isn't something residents assume. Sometimes, the theater has had to cancel at the last minute when shipments haven't arrived. Getting movies to the screen relies on getting both a hard copy of the film and a digital key before showtime.
All of the companies are located downstate, and so they ship things two-day air, and they think, hey, it's two-day air, it won't be a problem to get to you. And we've told them many, many times two-day air doesn't mean anything to us, but they just, it's big name, you know, it's Paramount, it's Universal, it's the big companies downstate that distribute the movies, and they do it on their schedule, not ours.
They had ordered both movies, but were still unsure what the Barbenheimer phenomenon would mean for them.
So it was kind of rushed, and we weren't sure that the movie would come in time. With the runway work that they're doing at the airport, a lot of cargo keeps getting delayed, and if we don't get the movie in time to run it and they call it digest it on the theater servers, then we can't play them in time.
Many had played with Barbies themselves. Fans like Ariel Andrew and Charlie Myers were happy to get to see the colorful feminist comedy.
I waited, what, 31 years?
Growing
I see
up
why.
With
friends. Mm-hmm. Playing Barbies. Always wished we had a movie to watch. Barbies and finally came up. I love the Kens.
The Kens and One Allen.
I had a weird Barbie. I think we all had a weird Barbie. We all had a weird Barbie.
Others were following the buzz.
Because I bought Mattel's stock on the hype, and I'm hoping the stock goes up. So I'm contributing to my own stock increase by going to the movie.
Oh, the granddaughter wanted to watch Barbie.
Nobody seemed too bothered that Oppenheimer wasn't on just yet. They were hoping it would be on for this upcoming weekend, but the schedule was just released with Barbie and Mission Impossible again. While other theaters bolstered sales by having Barbie and Oppenheimer as a pair, they say in Bethel it might be better this way.
That way people don't have to make a decision between the two in one weekend. Going to the movies is a special treat for a lot of families.
People in Bethel are used to it.
Oh, we'll get it. If we don't get it, I'll see Oppenheimer sometime on you know, when it comes on stream.
But they were happy to be part of the Barbie buzz. In Bethel, I'm Sunny Bean.
Humpback whales could be growing their own food supply and fighting climate change in a very unusual way, through their poo. KFSK's Thomas Copeland has more on research happening this summer on the whale pump hypothesis.
The first time Dana Block ever saw a whale, she was in Provincetown, Massachusetts, with her grandfather.
I would usually fall asleep on the whale watches, I think, because it was a long boat ride out there. It was sunny and rocking. And when I was about 7, I was like, I'm going to stay awake and I'm going to see all the whales and spot them first.
And it was humpbacks in particular that Block fell in love with.
They're so kind of like lumpy, bumpy and gangly and have this ridiculous shape. They're mysterious and under the water. Like there's just these giant mammals like blobbing around doing really cool stuff.
2 decades later, Block has crossed the continent to study some of that cool stuff going on under the waves as part of a postgraduate degree at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. She's looking into a process called the whale pump hypothesis. Block says it has 4 steps.
Step 1 is the whale is feeding on nutrient-rich prey.
And that could be krill, herring, maybe juvenile salmon or sand lance.
Step 2 is the whales return to the surface and they produce a fecal plume in the surface water.
Okay, but what is fecal plume in like normal language?
A fecal plume is a giant cloud of whale poop.
Block says the best way to spot the whale poop is from a drone.
And I have a picture here that you can see it's like a red cloud that's kind of coming from underneath the whale's tail, and it usually comes as the whale dives.
But enough of what the poop looks like, it's what the poop contains that really matters.
Step 3, the material in the whale poop is very rich in nutrients. In Southeast Alaska, we're mostly interested in phosphorus and nitrogen.
And finally comes step 4.
Phytoplankton are using the nutrients to grow and reproduce.
So there you have it, the 4 steps in the whale pump hypothesis in Southeast Alaska. But wait, why should we care about phytoplankton? Well, Block says there are 2 reasons why. The first is that phytoplankton are the base of the ocean food chain. Everything else relies on it, including the fish that whales eat. And that's why Dana says humpbacks could be like gardeners of the sea.
It's like they're fertilizing the area where their food may be growing. And in that sense, the whales may be kind of in less competition with the fisheries or with other ocean needs than we sometimes think.
And the second reason we should care about phytoplankton is maybe even more important.
They're primary producers that are responsible for about 50% of the oxygen in the air. So they're responsible for every other breath you take.
50% of the oxygen produced in the world is from phytoplankton? What?
Yeah. Some estimates are higher, but that's a ballpark estimate.
I thought trees produced all the oxygen.
Trees produce a lot of the oxygen, but the oceans are giant and cover most of the earth.
Plus, when phytoplankton die, they sink to the bottom of the ocean, storing all that carbon far away from the surface. Now, superhero phytoplankton like this sound really cool, but Block's job is a little less glamorous. She works with the Alaska Whale Foundation out of Warm Springs Bay to collect the data she needs.
Whale's up, going down.
She has a video of herself hanging off the side of a boat with a white net in her hand.
Perfect. When the drone pilot says, like, okay, go ahead, I drop a small phytoplankton net into the water and just run it through the fecal plume. I pull it out and transfer that into a bottle and put it in the freezer next to our frozen berries.
What does it smell like?
It smells awful. It smells like fishy poop. I mean, it is fishy poop, so.
Block says there's lots more work to be done in the future. But when she's out on the water, she's thinking back to her grandfather's boat in Massachusetts.
If I told my 7-year-old self, I wouldn't have believed myself then because it's just like, that's way too cool.
Even if it involves scooping up whale poo?
Yeah, the whale poo I don't think I would have anticipated.
Block will continue her research until the spring of 2024, so there's plenty of time for her to fully digest all the data she collects this summer. In Petersburg, I'm Thomas Copeland.
An ongoing effort to sell Seward's city-run utility to a larger utility company is getting another chance on the ballot. In May, a vote on whether to sell the utility to Homer Electric Association failed 58% of the residents supported the sale, but the city required a 60% threshold, and it failed by just 7 votes. After the public shot down the sale, the utility's manager warned of an impending increase to rates. On Monday, the Seward City Council considered a resolution which would ask voters if the city should reduce the 60% requirement to a simple majority. They also took up a resolution to put the sale back on the ballot in October. Public testimony was not supportive of either resolution. Seward residents criticized the council's decision to discuss parts of the sale process in closed-door meetings and the choice of Homer Electric Association as a buyer over Anchorage utility Chugach Electric, which has lower rates. One of those residents was Kevin Dunham.
There's just no way that you should have done what you did. Now, you need to let the people know what the rates are out in the open, not in executive session.
Other speakers criticized the tactics of changing the election requirements and the interest in putting the sale back on the ballot this year, which many characterized as hasty. Several council members, however, said the 58% support during the last election suggests general support for the sale. Member Michael Calhoun referenced an advisory note on the same matter 2 decades ago that had a simple majority of support.
Now we're at a 58.5%, which is almost 19% higher than the people that voted no. In any other form, and I understand what the charter says, but in any other form, that is a landslide.
The resolution passed 4-2, which means Seward voters will get to decide in October if that threshold should be decreased. Then the council supported another vote on the sale, which means that will be back on the ballot for Seward voters in October as well.
The Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge shows significant cooling. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute. Inflation slowed in June to an annual rate of 3%, according to the Commerce Department. That's down 0.8 of a point from the prior month, and personal incomes last month grew slightly faster than inflation. Oil prices are headed for their 5th straight week of gains as investors anticipate better-than-expected global growth and increased demand. Earlier this month, OPEC Plus announced more supply cuts to boost prices. Ford is recalling single-exhaust versions of its best-selling F-150 pickups, model years 2021 to 23. There are reports of a wiring flaw that can activate the car's parking brake while in motion. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 28th day of July, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:56. It will set again at 10:34, which will give us 16 hours and 39 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 2 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 81 degrees, set in 1987, and our record low was 40 degrees. That was set last year. Currently 59 degrees in Kodiak with several clouds hanging around, sort of a haze of cloudiness. South winds to 18 miles per hour at the airport right now, where they have 10 miles of visibility. Rain is expected for the rest of the afternoon until 11 p.m. tonight. Southeast winds to 15 are expected to turn to the northwest after midnight. Look for an overnight low of about 52. Scattered showers for tomorrow with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 62, those northwest winds continuing at about 15. And then after mostly cloudy skies overnight on Saturday, look for partly sunny skies on Sunday with a high near 66, and mostly sunny for Monday with a high near 67. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 23, date issued 11:30 a.m. on July 26th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, July 29th, to 9 p.m. Monday, July 31st in the following areas. In the northwest Kodiak district, except for the Uyak Bay, Zachar Bay, and Inner Yukanik Bay sections will remain closed. The northeast Kodiak district, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The east side Kodiak district, the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak district, the Afognak district, and the mainland district. Closed waters will be reduced to the stream terminus of Salter Creek, stream number 259415, from noon Saturday, July 29th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 31st. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, the seaward zones of the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak district will reopen at noon Saturday, July 29th. As previously announced, the seaward zones of the Alinchak Bay, Katmai, Dakovac Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Hallow Bay, and Big River sections of the mainland district, and the seaward zones of the northwest Afognak and Shuyak Island sections of the Afognak district will remain closed. The Spirton Bay Special Harvest Area remains open until further notice. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Short notice in-period closures may occur for seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the Cape Igvac section as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The tide has turned in the last hour. It is going out again now. Our next low tide will be at 4:07 this afternoon here on the east side and be 3.5 feet. That'll be followed by a high tide at 10:42 this evening of 8.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 5:06 this afternoon and be 5.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:16 p.m. of 13.1 feet. Mariners, here is your marine forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today and Saturday, tonight and Saturday rather. Southeast 20 and seas to 5 feet today. South 15 becoming northwest 25 after midnight, except north of Dangerous Cape. South 20 becoming variable 10, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 25, seas to 4 feet on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tomorrow, east 20 today and seas to 5 feet. For tonight, west 20, seas building to 4 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, northwest 25 and seas to 4 feet in the Shelikof. Senior citizens of Kodiak will be holding a regular board meeting today at 1 p.m., just about a half hour from now. That'll be held in the center's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181. It is Diaper Distribution Day. That happens on the fourth Friday of every month. You get free diapers and wipes of all sizes. Size swaps are welcome, for it is first come, first serve, and that happens at the parsonage of the Frontier Baptist Church, which is at 1910 East Rizanoff Street. You can also email them for more information at kiofrontier@gmail.com. But again, that is today at the parsonage. It looks like all day. The Kodiak Audubon Society is having a pair of hikes this weekend. Both are in the moderately difficult to difficult range. Saturday's hike is North Sister Back Trail to Saddle Knot Peak. That's 2.6 miles, 1,550 feet of elevation, and is a level four hike out of five. For more information, contact hike leader Marcia Spafford at 907-654-4622. And on Sunday, there's an Anton Larsen Pass Loop hike that is 6 miles, 1,950 feet in elevation, also a level 4. For more information, contact hike leader Cindy Trussell at 907-486-2878. But at any rate, you can just meet your hike leader at 9:30 a.m. on either day in front of the Kodiak Island Convention and Visitors Bureau. That's the ferry building at the end of Center Avenue downtown. Nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are available in the city clerk's office. For more information, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Things happening at the library include the Summer Reading Challenge. Activities continue, and on Saturday at 10:15 a.m., we are having a library hive check as usual. Children under 5 must watch from inside, and kids under 13 must be supervised by a parent or guardian. Call the library at 907-486-8686 to sign up for your spot for the library hive check tomorrow. And the library's escape room is open all summer long. Daily time slots are available except for Mondays. Call now to check availability and reserve your spot. Again, that number for the library is 907-486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.